This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Over the summer, an era came to a close when WKRC news anchor Rob Braun left the station after 35 years. He became the latest veteran journalist to depart what had been Cincinnati's dominant TV news team, an exodus that followed the purchase of the station by Sinclair Broadcasting and the airing of controversial, mandated, conservative editorials. And here to talk about his time on the air, his broadcast pedigree, why he left, and what's next is Rob Braun. Welcome, Rob.
Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here. It's just so fun to watch what you're doing and so different than what I did for years.
Well, I can assure you I'm probably more excited to have you here. This is very exciting. I certainly, like so many, grew up watching you and your team at Channel 12. So this is a real thrill to get the opportunity to talk to you about your experience and what you did there. And for those of you listening, if you want to join our conversation, please do. 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. So the news business is one of those 24/7 gigs, right?
You
certainly have a shift, but you're never really off. You're always waiting for some call in, or if you see a ambulance or fire truck go by, you're wondering what's going on. I'm wondering how you're doing now, where you don't really have anyone to report to.
Yeah, it's certainly different, because I always describe television news as a lifestyle, not a job. Because you're right, as soon as your feet hit the floor in the morning, you're tuning into this outlet and that and trying to figure out what happened. And then your day just is driven by all of that information flow until it ends up on the air. And I thrived on that for so many years, loved every minute of it, but it is consuming at a minimum of 10 hours a day. But if you love it, you know, it's fun. Who cares?
For sure, it's fun. What are you doing with your time now? We'll talk about your new gig soon, but you know, you're off a lot now.
I am. Well, at least it appears I am.
I'm
off the air a lot. But my life, you know, at first when I left Channel 12, it's almost euphoric. You're out of the mix. You have no responsibility, seemingly. And after about 4 weeks, you realize that life is not going to be a vacation. You have to do things. And I have a lot of other commitments business-wise that I developed over the years with my wife and my best friend, Tim Wirtz. And those things are open and need my help. And so that's what I've jumped into. So my days are full. And I farm full-time. So it's just been an interesting juggle to figure out where I go from this crazy, intense, 24/7 environment to where I'm controlling all of the minutes of my day, but I still have to achieve some things.
And you're going to be farming a lot more.
We are, yeah.
And you were saying, I mean, you are a farmer. You've got stuff going on this farm.
Exactly. I didn't want to be that guy who bought the land from Cincinnati and went to cut the grass. You know, I wanted to raise the animals, because frankly, my father had a horse farm and he made me run it. So I learned a lot about raising animals and the equipment and how things work. I don't think it would be easy at my age then, when we bought the farm 20 years ago, to step in if I hadn't had that training from Dad's horse ranch. So the transition wasn't hard. And it's fascinating, but it is consuming. And in today's world, a family farm cannot make enough money to support the family full time. In most cases, most people have to have another job.
And you did have another job for quite some time.
I did.
You were filtered into people's living rooms for more than 30 years. I'm wondering if you could just take us to that moment where you were having that thought and that conversation with yourself and reach the conclusion that you were finished.
Yeah, it was the fact that the business has changed for me. We had new owners, and their business model was different than anything I'd been used to. We weren't owned locally anymore. We didn't seemingly have the commitment that we had in the newsroom to doing purely local things, that we were being filtered things from elsewhere in the country and required to run them. And I just didn't see that fitting with me. And I had a historic run, and I can't complain about that at all. And the support from the public has been enormous for years and years. And it just seemed to be the right time to walk away. I'm fortunate that I could do that, you know, that I could see that, and I didn't get blown up. I didn't get driven out. I didn't, and there was no negative to it. It was just time to go. It was time to turn the page.
Was there sadness or fear or anxiety when you thought, I'm going to be stepping away from what I've known for so long?
You know, I thought about that a lot, and I worried about that a lot. But I think because I thought about it so much that when the time came, I didn't feel it. I didn't worry. When I thought I would be concerned when I drove out of the parking lot of Channel 12 for the last time. I didn't. It was a confidence I had about the decision. Yes, it's time to move on. The world's not ending. I have other things to do. And nothing lasts forever. And so I walked away very comfortably.
You were talking about the change in ownership. That's a reference to Sinclair Broadcasting, based out of Maryland. And they receive a lot of attention in media conversations because of its conservative politics and some of those related mandates that they force the stations to do, whether on air or behind the scenes. What was the general feeling in the newsroom at WKRC when Sinclair officials came to the station and talked to you about the new ownership?
Well, it's a mixed feeling. Probably still is today. I can't speak for the folks who are still there. By the way, there are a lot of people there now who are literally the best in the television news business. That was hard to walk away from. They're still there trying to do the good things right every day. And I think that they I miss that. I miss them. I miss that interaction. But I just want everybody to be sure that they understand that that the people there are good. So the business model that Sinclair brought in was different, and it was hard to swallow. But it, on paper, from a business standpoint, it makes a lot of sense because they own a lot of stations. They have a lot of reporters. So they file all these stories to a central location, and then you as a station pick from that and play a lot of things that come to you from elsewhere. And then there are some things that they require you to run. Therein lies the rub. And a lot of the things that you had the ability to choose from were not of the quality that we were used to producing in Cincinnati. And so we struggled a lot with that. You'd have a hard time believing that that report was worth running in Cincinnati, both by what effect it had on the viewer and the quality with which it was produced. So those were the things that began to build up and caused my exodus.
There was one piece in particular, of course, that got a lot of attention, and you have commented about before. There was this must-run editorial that seemingly targeted fake news and the danger that it poses. But this was mandated by Sinclair, where all the station's main anchors across the country were reading the same script. You couldn't change a word of it. You had some problems with that script, didn't you?
I did. They weren't my words. Some of what was in that was true. And some of the things that we were required to say were not my words and not the way I would say it, and I didn't believe them. And I had the luxury for so many years to be the final editor of everything that went on the air. And so I was allowed to change it, allowed to rewrite it, and I had my personal control over the daily news. To my job, I always focused on removing the bias from news stories. And in this case, we were just required to read them as puppets, and it just didn't sit well. So there was a long line of aggravation and negotiation, which is not worth going into. But in the end, they made me read what they wrote. They changed one word that I asked them to change, and that was it, out of the copy. And that was the beginning of the end, because I just wasn't a fit, because that's how they were going to run their business. And frankly, it's their business. They're allowed to do what they're going to do. It's their ball game. And you had to get on board or get out. And fortunately, I was able to get out on my own terms.
What was the aftermath of all that? Were there? I had heard there were threats at some stations. Did you experience any of that?
Oh, yeah, lots. But the aftermath was that the more senior people who were in my position and used to control used their opportunity to leave, retire, and move on.
We did see a lot of talent and experience leave the Channel 12 newsroom in recent years. We're talking about Deb Dixon, Jeff Hirsch, Joe Webb, all veterans who left before you did. And I guess your former co-anchor, Cammy Durking, announced that she's leaving at the end of December, is what I read from John Kieswetter's blog. And what do you think those departures and all that institutional knowledge and skill do, not just to that newsroom, but to our area and the trust that we have in the news that's coming across our screen?
You know, it's interesting. I've had a long time to reflect on that now, and there is a significant void developed when that kind of talent walks out. But Everything changes. And it's like, you know, we're sort of like a sports team in the news business where the careers are shorter than average careers for others. There is a quarterback, which that was my position. And sometimes it's time for them to move on, just like Marvin Lewis and just like some of the other big ball players. Pete Rose left when people thought he was in his prime, you know. But sometimes it just changes. And you don't want to be that old guy who says, you know, well, they're doing it all wrong, and we are the only ones who know what's going on. They very well could be doing it exactly right, and we just don't agree, and it doesn't fit with us. I don't know the answer to that and where it's going to evolve. But having said that, it's just different. So it's molting. You know, newsrooms molt over time. No one stays forever. So I think that's what's happened. And I think that because of the good people left at Channel 12, you're still going to get good product to the degree to which the corporation will allow them to do it. And that's just the nature of the beast. Every corporation now is trying to do more with less.
I don't suppose that's some coded language for Andy Dalton.
No, I'm an Andy Dalton fan.
Me too.
I wish they were winning, but I am not against Andy Dalton at all.
All right. When you think back on all those years spent in that anchor chair and at that station, what are you proudest of as being this trusted voice of the day's news?
You know, I'm most proud about the fact that we provided a menu of what was going on in your neighborhood from which you could form your personal opinions about how you felt about politics and what was going on. We just told you the truth, and people would tune into us and trusted us to do that. And I think that was what I loved the most. And Nick Clooney was my mentor. He taught me that. And then I really believe that you... Oh, I don't know. I think it's, I'm trying not to make it sound so lofty. What we really did was help people. We were the voice for the voiceless. We tried to do things that would benefit those who couldn't help themselves sometimes, a lot of times. And then other than that, we just told people what was going on today. But they trusted us and believed us, and they formed their opinions from that. And they trusted us so much, they kept coming back. And that's why we were a success. But if do you have time for a story about Hedrick?
I'd love to hear that.
So
you're talking about the
Tim Hedrick,
the late meteorologist.
Yeah, my very good friend. Absolutely. The best weatherman I've ever worked with in my life. A very talented scientist. But when they paired us in the beginning, we blew. I mean, we were bad. And we were in number four in the position in the ratings together. So we were trying to stunt and do anything in the world to wave our hands and cause someone to listen to us and look at us. And so Hedrick came up with this idea that we're going to give away concert tickets. So he'd go up to the radio station and they'd give him concert tickets, and he would go out and stand at a phone booth, and we would do some sort of a segment, and he'd give the number for the phone booth. And the first caller won the tickets, and it began to catch on, and it caught on to the level that that Cincinnati Bell called the station and threatened us because we were crashing their computers at that time of night because so many people were calling to get these tickets because it was just fun to participate, and Hedrick was hilarious doing it, and we were getting attention. That was the beginning of our really long, productive run.
Oh, that's such a great story.
But it was just so simple, right? It was just, we're waving our hands at this phone booth. Look at us. So finally, Cincinnati Bell, they were serious. They negotiated with the station, and they caused us to stop doing it because their equipment couldn't handle it.
Our assistant producer, Selena Reeder, has some experience with you all.
Oh, yeah, very much
so. She's sending me something I don't really know what this means, but since you brought up Tim Hedrick,
yeah,
she says that I'm supposed to ask you that this was a bone of contention between the two of you. Is it sledding or sled riding?
Well, if you're from Cincinnati, this was my pitch. It's sled riding. Okay. If you're from somewhere else, it's sledding.
Oh, that's awesome.
So Hedrick grew up in Chicago, and then he worked in Iowa. So for him, it was sledding. Kit was also a sledding person.
Former co-anchor, Kit Andrews.
Yeah, she grew up on the left coast, so she was sledding. So we'd have that argument every year. But so I'm from Northside, so it's sled riding, because that's what you do, right? That was my argument to Hedrick. You ride the sled.
That's awesome. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and if you can't tell, we are joined today by former local TV news anchor, one of the dominant anchors in Cincinnati news history, Rob Braun. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Let's go to the phones now and take a call. We've got John on the line. Hi, John. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Actually, two things for Rob. So first, I want to thank him for having the integrity to say, hey, you know what? I'm out of here because of these policies. I mean, maybe indirectly, but versus I'm just retiring and not making them. Making a point out of it, because I applaud him for doing that, of having the integrity to say, you know what, I don't want to have my news dictated to me by an owner. I want, you know, to be fair and balanced as much as possible. So kudos to you for that, Rob, for doing that.
Thank you.
And secondly, and this is more important, I used to work at Channel 12 years ago, and I was a production assistant.
I'll be darned.
And Rob is one of the guys that you see on the air who is nice on the air, and he's nice off the air. He didn't have to talk to me or be kind to me or whatever like that. There's a lot of prima donnas. He'll tell you that in the business, and a lot of them are actually quite cruel off the air, as it were, to, you know, any kind of newcomers or whatever. But he wasn't. He was always professional, always nice, always said hello, and was just a genuinely decent human being to work with. We only worked a couple times together because I did the morning shift, and he was doing the evening news, starting off with Deb Silverstein, I think it was.
Yeah, good memory.
But, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Ron, right.
That is so very nice of you to say. You know, my father is the one who taught me that. He said, you know, don't let your ego get the best of you, because this is a job. And if you can't do it today, they'll find somebody else. So there's no reason to think that you are special because you get to do this. You're lucky that you get to do it, and you need to remember that every day. Because his line was, when I started in Knoxville on the air, I called to complain about everything, right? Because that's what kids do to their dad. And he said, look, he hung up on me once, frankly. And then he said to me, he said, look, they could be calling somebody else, and they're not. They're calling you. So shut up and do your job.
Wow.
That was essentially what he taught me. He's from Ludlow. He was a worker and a workaholic, and he was right. Clooney was very workmanlike in his activities and when I worked with him. And I learned from him that it is, in fact, a job.
You know, when I started in this business professionally 16 years ago, I was at a radio station that was based at the time in Mount Adams, mm-hmm. in a building named for Bob Braun.
I'll be darned.
And that's, of course, your father. And he's one of the early generation personalities in Cincinnati radio and TV history. What was your experience growing up as Bob Braun's son?
Well, this is the epitome of what happened. We had a wonderful childhood, but it was so different than anybody else because we got to do things like play on the set of Gomer Pyle in Los Angeles, because my father was making movies, and we would go out there and hang out, and he was friends with Jim Nabors, and we literally would play on the sets. And you can't tell other people that, right? I mean, because that's so ridiculously outrageous that they either think you're bragging or it's a lie. So I made the mistake 1 year of coming back to school in the fall when the teacher said, what did you do for your summer vacation? Write that paper. And I did, and I told the truth, and I was ridiculed. Because of, I put the truth in there about what we did. Dad hung out with movie stars because that's who his friends were. And so I never did that again. So every year when I came back to school and what did you do for your summer vacation, I lied. I wrote a story that was just not true because I couldn't tell him the truth.
Wow.
That was the kind of growing up you did. Dad was best friends with Bob Hope. I would go to the airport and pick him up. And take him to, he would always stay at the Netherlands, always have a masseuse, and always walk around the block. And sometimes I'd just be his walking buddy. We would play at his house when we were kids It's in the desert. It's Palm Springs. Yeah. And he had a putting green in his backyard. Dad and Dick Clark were friends. We hung out together. But you just can't go around telling people that. For Dad and all the people that were his friends, it was just normal. but for others it was not. So that's the way I would describe it.
And your dad, of course, hosted radio programs and for a long time, the Bob Braun Show here locally. That's a very special memory for a lot of people. When did you know you were going to follow him into the business?
The truth is, I was running restaurants and I was running a place that was a fine dining in Montgomery. And it, I ran it through its demise, which was planned when I was hired. And I ran this thing called the Flying Pig Pub next to Camargo Cadillac in that center back there. And frankly, I got tired of throwing people out at 2:30 in the morning who had too much to drink, and I was in charge. It was the only job I was ever fired from because the owner took a sabbatical. He was a chef and went to Paris for whatever they do. And he left me at 22 years old to run this place. When he left, it was in the red. When he came back, it was in the black. I brought in those games. Remember when Pac-Man first came out?
Oh, yeah.
All that sort of stuff. And I had music on Fridays and Saturdays, and we were in the black. He comes home from Paris, and he says he's furious with me. And I thought I was going to be, you know, the king because I made money for him while he was gone. And he was furious because I changed, quote, the ambiance of the place. Although we were making money, and I always thought that's what you do when you're in business. So that was the end of that, and he fired me.
And so you went into the family business.
I did. I called Dad, and I said, you know, if I wasn't necessarily focused on doing it, but I thought if I never try it, I'll always wonder the rest of my life. So Dad hooked me up with people he knew around the country. Dick Clark won. I went and talked to him, and that's a whole other story. But everybody wanted to make me a salesman in television because that's where the money is or was. I don't really know now if that's the case. And I didn't want to be a salesman because my father was great at selling product. And I wanted to do live television because the only thing left was television news. And so that's what I did. And Dad did live television. And I find that exciting, just like today. You can make a mistake, but everybody knows, you know, so there's a certain energy about it. And so that's what drove me into news. I went to Knoxville, Tennessee. The World's Fair was coming. They were hiring people. I lied and told them that I could shoot video and that I could edit. And they hired me. And I had to go in a few days early. And I said to a real photographer, I said, you have to teach me some things because I know nothing about it. So I worked at the World's Fair, and that's how it started. Wow. We had to ad-lib every day, doing a lot of live things, a lot of cut-ins, and that gave me a nice basis. Oh, and I also did I worked for Channel 5. They gave me an internship, and this was because of Dad. So I worked 6 months for no pay, 40 hours a week, to learn the newsroom.
You put in your work.
I feel like I did. Yeah.
And it helps having Dick Clark and Bob Hope on your references list, I imagine.
It does. It was fun. That was my first big time. I knocked down an interview with Bob at the Civic Auditorium in Knoxville in the back of a limousine because I knew he was coming. So I called him. He said, sure, come on over. So we literally sat in the limousine with a camera. I shot it. He held his own microphone. Wow. And we did an interview. And that went over pretty big.
Well, we're also joined in the studio now by WVXU media writer John Keyswetter. John, thanks for coming in with us today.
Hey,
is this
a lot
of
fun.
Is this when the hard questions start? I'm a little concerned.
You know, I don't think I ever told you this. I was at the Democratic National Convention 1996, which was the second term for Bill Clinton. And I meet Brian Lamb, the head of C-SPAN, the guy that founded C-SPAN. And I went up and introduced myself. He saw Cincinnati and he said, hey, how's Bob Braun doing?
How are you doing?
Wow.
He grew up in West Lafayette and would watch the show out of Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And got into radio and TV at a very early age and was a big fan of your dad.
That is so true. There were so many people like that. When Dad passed away, I heard from people all over the world who he had touched because Dad was very philanthropic, but he didn't do it in a big way. He did it very privately. He helped a lot of people get jobs. He helped a lot of people do things as simple as go to camp because he grew up in Ludlow. They couldn't afford to go to camp, and there was some angel who paid his way. And so for the rest of his life, once he was working, he sent kids to camp, Camp Ernst it was, because of that. So it's just fun to hear, you know, I knew your dad. He did this. He did that. He helped me, you know, and I love that about it.
Keith, what do you think about these departures from these high-profile posts in the local media landscape. What does it say about the state of things?
This is really a generational change. I mean, you think just at your station, you've got Deb Dixon and Cammie in December, but Jeff Hurst, Joe Webb, Rich Jaffe, Larry Davids, but also Tom McKee and Ken Brew, Lisa Cooney left Five.
Yeah.
John Popovich is going to retire at the end of the year. It's just kind of all the baby boomers of age that have had a great run. They were lucky enough to have a long run and walk out, most of them on their own terms. Yep. And what worries me, and you kind of touched on it, is this institutional memory. I mean, with the horses you had in Dixon, Hirsch, and Webb, you could say, who disaster? Or
or Beverly Hills.
Beverly Hills, yeah. Air Canada. And right away they would know what the story was and be able to add that perspective into the stories that they did.
And that's what's lacking is perspective, because that's exactly what I did as an anchor, is I would ask these big shot reporters questions like that. What used to be in that building? Do you remember 20 years ago when so-and-so happened? And Dixon could quote it, and Joe Webb could quote it, and Jeff Hirsch could quote it. I mean, it just was so fulfilling and rounding of the story, because they not only told you what happened today, but they told you what happened before and what's probably going to happen next. And I think that was the talent in what we did.
We got an email from a listener named Janelle. She says, I grew up watching Rob when visiting my grandparents. Thank you for your decades of responsible reporting. You are a treasure.
Oh, isn't that nice? Very nice.
So because
makes me feel old, but I am at 62, I suppose.
You know, there is a generational change taking place in the landscape, and there will be another change like this down the road.
Right.
So there are people coming up, and I'm wondering, you know, you spend a lot of time in this business and you're transitioning out of it. What's important for today's young and aspiring journalists, not just about the process of journalism, but the business of it as well?
I really think that what's important is what's always been important, and that is to find the true story and not one that someone is spoon-feeding you, and talk to the principals involved in the story and not read it on your phone and believe it, because most of what's on this device is wrong. And so that's how we survived longer than anyone anticipated television news would be around. It's because people kept tuning us in to see if what they read on this device in the morning was true. It's what I do now, is when I want to know about a story, instead of listening to a talking head, because on the national scene, I can't think of one who I totally trust. I go and look for the principals in the story, when there was a shooting of late. I want to hear what the sheriff has to say, just like I did as a reporter. I want to hear what the parents of the children involved have to say. And I want to form my opinions based on what I'm hearing from the principals in the story. And I suggest that that's what needs to continue to happen. And I fear that maybe it may become more about being on television and being the star of the event and less about the story, which is what should be the star of the event.
Well, I'm sad that we're out of time.
Are we really? This went so fast.
It's been great fun.
15 minutes longer than I was supposed to. So
wow.
I've got some upset producers and some upset guests who are going to have to come on in a shorter segment after this. But this has been such a pleasure. And we'll get to see you on TV again soon, because you are moving into a commercial space, both on radio and television for a local bank.
Yeah, I work for Heritage Bank now, which I never anticipated. I never thought I was going to do that. But I started in the business in doing commercials. And now I'm back doing commercials. Because of Chris Caudill, who's the chairman at Heritage, he gave me the opportunity to do it, and I'm having a ball, because that's the fun side of the business, right? It's the production side. Everybody has a smile in the studio when you're shooting commercials.
We'll be looking forward to that. And gosh, what a great time it was chatting with you and hearing
you.
Some more. I know there's so much more to learn, and hope I get the opportunity again. Rob Braun, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
And John Keyswetter, you can read his blog at WVXU.org. He's always got the scoop on what's happening in the local media landscape. Thank you for coming in as well, John.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.